My guest at this time is Dr. Wayne Grudem. He is a research professor in theology and biblical studies at Phoenix Seminary. He is also the author of numerous books, the latest of which is The Poverty of Nations, A Sustainable Solution. And Dr. Grudem, it's an honor to have you with us, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Well, one of the major debates we're having right now, of course, is over income inequality and the ongoing concern of the poor in our own country and around the world. Earlier this year, we noticed that it's been 50 years since the war on poverty was declared in this country. And as many Americans are aware, we spend a lot of money on foreign aid to hopefully developing nations. But oftentimes we don't see a lot of return on that investment. The reaction has been either, well, it's doing more good than if we did nothing at all. Others call the war on poverty and other programs a complete failure. As you look at it, what's the fundamental reason why these programs aren't working as well as everyone hoped they would have?
Well, the solution to poverty, and we're looking at poverty in nations around the world throughout the last 250 years of history, the solution to poverty has never come through foreign aid or domestic aid. The solution to poverty comes when people and nations are enabled to produce their own prosperity. So the question is not equality. The question is there opportunity? Is there freedom in the workplace? Is there economic freedom? Is there governmental freedom from excessive regulations so that people who are at the lower end of the income bracket can progress and have hope to progress toward higher income? And our book, of course, focuses, Greg, on nations as a whole. Why have some become wealthy and some have just had moderate success and some have remained very poor? And we list in this book, The Poverty of Nations, we list 79 factors in the economy, the government, and the culture that either determine that a country will stay in poverty or enable it to progress toward greater prosperity. And we think the book is very hopeful in that regard.
Dr. Grudem, in terms of what you just said, obviously it's beneficial to these countries to produce their own goods, develop their own economy. There's obviously a great premium, though, on charity in this country. So does that mean that charity doesn't take on the benefit that we think it does, or it's only a small part of what needs to happen?
Don't get me wrong. Private charity does much good in the United States and in the world. Again, we're focusing on foreign nations, but there's application to the United States. And here's the situation. If we send foreign to a poor country in another nation, if we send food or medical help, it meets an urgent need, but it solves the symptom. It doesn't solve the problem. The problem, the urgent need is that people are hungry or they're sick, but that's the symptom. The problem is that the nation is not producing enough of its own goods and enough of its own medical care. And so the question is, how can nations become more productive? Many nations throughout history have done this. They've produced their own goods. They've trained their own doctors. They've produced their own medical care. And then they become self-sustaining. And that is the question of economic history that my co-author Barry Asmus and I endeavor to answer in this book, The Poverty of Nations.
Let's talk a little bit about what that looks like. Obviously, a free market, based on looking at this book, is essential for success in these countries. And oftentimes, the poorest nations don't have that. So what position are free marketeers, free market capitalists, Christians, what position are we in to influence change in countries that simply don't adhere to those same values?
First, I want to strengthen a statement that you made, Greg. You said oftentimes countries that lack a free market system remain in poverty. I would say always. There are no examples in history where a country has risen out of poverty without a free market economic system. Government can, and we go through the history of the world and all the economic systems that have been tried, from hunting and gathering and subsistence farming and slavery and feudalism and mercantilism, and of course more recently socialism, communism, high government control. Those have all failed to produce prosperity. The only way that nations have come from poverty to prosperity throughout all history is through a free market economic system. Sometimes that's called capitalism. We decided the word capitalism had pejorative connotations to a number of people, and so we thought the essence of it is, do you have freedom to own property? Do you have freedom to buy and sell? Do you have freedom to produce and enter the marketplace? And that is what leads to economic freedom. The Heritage Foundation and the Wall Street Journal every year puts out an index of economic freedom, which we refer to quite often in our book. It ranks countries according to 10 factors of economic freedom throughout the history of the last year in each country. And those that have higher degrees of economic freedom are massively more successful economically than those that have high levels of government control. So free market, private ownership of property, and then in government, the rule of law, a belief and a conviction and a behavior that says that government officials are to serve for the good of the people, not the good of themselves and their friends and relatives. In the realm of values, which values and beliefs in a culture are what determine the direction it goes in terms of government and economics. You mentioned that I'm a professor of theology and biblical studies. I am, and that's why I could co-author with an economist, and we found that our findings from the moral teachings of the Bible, things like not stealing, like telling the truth, like viewing your work as a calling from God to whom you are accountable, those things lead to economic prosperity. But Barry Asmus, my co-author, the economist, saw that those values, those biblical-based moral values, have really influenced economies in positive ways throughout economic history as well. So three areas we talk about. The economic system has to be free market, and many criteria listed to measure that. The government has to be a government that works for the good of the people, not for the corrupt benefit of the elite rulers. And third, the biblical moral values in work and productivity and property, in honesty, in seeing win-win situations from buying and selling transactions, those are all necessary for an economy to begin to grow or for individuals to begin to grow toward greater prosperity.
Two quick follow-ups to that. First of all, Dr. Grudem, in that third category of biblical values, the strength and stability of families is critical to economic success as well. We see it in America, of course, with single parenthood, a lot of financial struggles, poverty, welfare, and that sort of thing. And
yeah, the greatest single determinant of poverty is a single-parent family. Of course, we should do what we can to help single-parent families. But when government encourages rather than discourages single-parent families, of course, it's harmful to families and harmful to the economy.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Grudem. The book is The Poverty of Nations. And, sir, one of the shining examples that you cite in the book is that of Botswana. Where was that country? Where is it now, and how did it change?
Botswana is the success story of sub-Saharan Africa. It's the country, for listeners or viewers who may not realize this, it's the country immediately north of South Africa. We classify the countries of the world in terms of their per capita income, and color code the map. They are in the middle income range now, and they're very close to becoming one of the wealthier nations of the world. But they had the benefit of having a leader, Seretse Khama, the first, he was a hereditary king, but then became elected as president of Botswana. He had wise policies that were instituted, and we think that was affected by the Christian training that he had in the schools that he went through elementary and high school and advanced education there in Botswana. We're happy for that. It results in a free market economy, a government system that's more accountable to the people, and people believing that there are biblical moral values, as I mentioned, not stealing, telling the truth, seeking win-win transactions in business, private ownership of property.
Where do you see the overall trend right now, Dr. Grudem? Botswana is obviously an example of following the path you lay out in the book. If you look at Western Europe, and a lot of Europe actually, that seems to be tilting less free market. Some would say the same is happening here in this country over the past few years. So what do you see as the global trend right now?
Well, it's mixed. The recent developments in Crimea with Russia invading and annexing parts of Ukraine are very troubling. Unfortunately, no one in the world about to stop them, because our present administration under President Obama doesn't have the will to take the effort to provide much more support for the independence of Ukraine. So that's troubling. And yes, there is a swing back toward more socialist control of the economy in some Latin American countries. On the other hand, Germany and the United Kingdom, for instance, in recent years, and to some extent the Scandinavian countries, have seen the light and have begun to see the failure of this highly controlling planned socialist economy. And they're switching in a more free market direction. We're encouraged by that. South Korea is an encouraging sign. Chile is encouraging overall, with some troubling factors. As I said, Botswana is encouraging. So the overall trend is positive. We're thinking that this book provides hope, because it's saying the solution to poverty in poor nations is not foreign aid, it's not debt forgiveness, it's not free trade coffee, it's not discovering more natural resources, it's not printing more money, it's not blaming colonialism or the world trade system. It is producing more of your own goods and services. And there are 79 specific factors that we list that countries can take. And every one of those provides hope for the nation, because every one of those factors will give some incremental improvement in the economic status of the nation toward greater prosperity.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Grudem. The book is The Poverty of Nations. A couple of questions remaining in our time with Dr. Grudem. Sir, you mentioned earlier in our conversation kind of the three pillars of this approach to emerging out of a poverty situation, including free markets and, of course, the foundation and Christian principles. What if you have one but not the other two, or two but not the third? Do they all have to come together to work well, or can you make progress with just one or two components?
Every little bit helps. We think the book will be helpful because leaders in a country can go through this list of 79 factors in those three countries and say, here's something we can improve, here's something we can improve, and begin to make progress. If you have a free market system but a corrupt government, then you're going to have crony capitalism and the government favoring its friends and not upholding rule of law and patents and copyrights. It's going to be very detrimental. There is another situation where you have Japan having tremendous economic growth since the 1950s, particularly, not Christian-based in its cultural background or beliefs. But the two factors that we list at the end from biblical moral standards are that the nation must count family, friends, and joy in life as more important than economic prosperity. The nation must count spiritual well-being and relationship with God as more important than material prosperity. And that's based on the statement of Jesus that the two great commands are to love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Love for God and neighbor must come first. It seems to us that Japan, without an explicitly biblical rooting in its economic growth, has some shortcomings in terms of not having a Christian view of periodic times of rest from work, perhaps devoting too much energy to economic growth and the workplace in the detriment of the family and detriment of overall spiritual well-being. So you can have one without the other, yes, but it won't bring about the kind of overall human flourishing and economic prosperity along with relational and spiritual prosperity that we're hoping that nations will move toward more and more throughout the next coming years. Every time we present this as an audience, to an audience, people immediately began to say, well, what about the things we're doing in the United States? Aren't we having more government regulation, higher taxation, disincentives to productivity, disincentives to work? Aren't we having a moral breakdown in the way that people think of honesty and truthfulness, not breaking contracts and obedience to the rule of law, government ignoring the rule of law? There are many things that our country is doing that are actually hindering our economic growth. And, of course, that results in a stagnant economy, essentially, and high levels of unemployment, which people want to work. I think it's a God-given desire to work in productive ways, but they can't find work because the jobs are scarce. So, yes, I think the book has a lot of application to the United States, too, because while we trace the history of wealth and poverty throughout the world in many other nations, we see the United States taking many troubling trends that are hindering economic growth and hindering productivity, and sadly increasing government control and lack of government accountability to the will of the people. It's very disturbing.
Dr. Grudem, thank you so much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Wayne Grudem is a research professor of theology and biblical studies at Phoenix Seminary. He's the author of numerous books, the latest of which is The Poverty of Nations, A Sustainable Solution, which he wrote along with co-author and economist Barry Asmus. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.